Hey, it's Joey's AI assistant with a quick note. During this episode in which Joey asks questions about black people and shares with two of his friends and co-hosts of the podcast, stories of personally being a recipient of racism, the F-word, and N-word, are used a few times. Pastor with No Answers podcast certainly takes much more offense of the latter, but while the F-word is censored, the N-word is not, given the context it holds for the conversation. And we always bleep the F-word, because this is a grandma-friendly show. Duh. Hope you enjoy. And don't forget, get the B-sides for extra content. Okay, enjoy this fucking show.
So this, listeners, is when we get into the speculation. There's no way we can know this guy's story, what was going on in his head. But what I want Stoy and Robbie to do is give us some, here's what could have been going on. Here's what he could have gone through. Here's what his dad and mom could have taught him.
There's so much missing information. There's so much missing context to even know if something even is racist.
I turn around. It was very intimidating because this was a very large, angry man. And we're talking almost shaking with anger. It had something to do with you white people have taken so much from my people. And now you're trying to take my wife.
I'm interested to hear how your encounter went when you dealt with somebody being racist towards you, because there's so many things I feel like me or Robbie can shine a light on.
I like demanded, pleaded, called God on promises and was like, you have to show up or like I am done. And he did.
That's something to really think about. What does it mean that the God of the universe loves me?
Are we saying that our God is bigger than their God or what?
Man, you got my mind going crazy right now.
I just think that that is evangelical bullshit.
And I don't fit in their box anymore. So feeling rejected from the church makes me feel far away from God.
If I'm living out the love of God, love of the divine, then in some ways we're unoffendable.
It's wrong to marginalize anybody for any reason.
Sometimes we can just have some things about our perspective that's off until we encounter someone who can challenge our thoughts, have conversations with us, and we just continue to grow and evolve.
I'm with you there. Yeah, I like that.
That sounded like womp, 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 womp to Robin.
I'm a hardcore gospel lover. I do love the gospel. I just think we get it wrong.
Girl, I was so highly medicated, I don't even know if you... Oh, found my people.
Yeah.
What's up, Stoy?
What's up, fellas?
How you doing, man?
How you doing?
What's going on?
Talking football, you know.
Oh, yeah?
Still don't know much about it, but it's...
All right, so I hope that you guys enjoy this episode as excited as I am to do it. So give the listeners a little backdrop. I tell people this all the time. I've got way more podcast and conversation ideas than I have to be able to do in a lifetime. And I've got some different spreadsheets. One of them is kind of like a main idea spreadsheet for this podcast. And I have written down so many things because it's one of those deals to where I'll think about an idea, conversation or something like that. And then I'll, you know, put it on the spreadsheet. Well, I have collected over the years, and obviously we've talked a lot about race and racial matters and that sort of thing, but I have collected so many different stories, things I wanted to share, things I wanted to ask, but there just never was a time to fit them in. I'm fitting them all in for this one. And it's so y'all are my friends. It's safe to process out loud with you guys. And when there's a comfort level like that, the doors open for even more communication. And I think that this will be helpful and interesting to our listeners. So I'm a podcaster. I want interesting content, and I do think this content is very interesting. What I'm not doing, fellas, is even though I do think that prejudice is a human problem and racism goes in all sorts of directions, my message, what I'm trying to get off it right now, is not one of those, hey, I'm a victim too. Hey, I want y'all to make sure y'all see that racism against white, that's not what I'm doing. I think these are interesting stories. But as I've gotten older, I look back on the times when I was someone who was the recipient of racism, and I look at them now with way more interest. And so some of these stories that happened to me, what I would love to stretch you guys to doing, because y'all are both mature guys and you're not going to try to speak someone's thoughts who you've never met before, I would love for you to speculate what ifs. Like, I'm going to share a story of when I was a school teacher and one of the kids' father accused me of racism in a really messed up way. Like, I want to look into that a little deeper, and the three of us speculate, like, what could have caused that?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right. I do want to tell y'all this just out of fun. These things happen so often. So William is listening to a new hip hop song, and they are totally using a sample of one of the bigger Nelly songs, you know, early 2000s. And he said, have you ever heard this song? I was just like, yeah, I mean, I've heard what they're using. And he told me the artist. And I said, well, yeah, I mean, but this song is pretty much a Nelly song. Y'all, he laughed. Nelly, what are you talking about, Dad? Like, he seriously thought it was one of those dumb dad moments. And I was like, what are you talking about? And so I let him hear the Nelly song. He's like, oh, my gosh. But I've been having a lot of old man moments. What do you guys think about the current NBA shoes? The popular basketball shoes. Do y'all have any opinions or even any knowledge of what they look like?
Oh, yeah. I mean, my son is a shoe fanatic. Like, I don't know if y'all have seen. I know Robbie's on TikTok, but I mean, I've done a video of my son's room, and like the amount of shoes that he has is ridiculous. And but I think the most interesting thing about that is when we were growing up, basketball shoes had to be high tops. Like, yeah. they had to protect your ankles, and like most of them were bulky and heavy, like Patrick Ewing's and things like that. Michael Jordan's, like, if you got some Jordans and you're on the court and some Jordans, you were the business, you know? But nowadays, they play in low tops. They play in mid, like, they don't play in the shoes that we considered basketball shoes. And my son told me, I was like, he wanted some Jordans. I got him some Jordans. And he told me, he was like, I said, you want to go in the back and then break him in? He's like, he looked at me like I was strange. He's like, Daddy, these not shoes you play basketball. And I was like, what do you mean they're basketball shoes? And he said, no, these are walking around shoes. I said, what? I never even heard such a thing. And but that's what it is. They play in lighter shoes that is not even covering the ankles.
And
that,
they're ugly. They're ugly.
That's crazy.
What happened to badass black and white shoes? Or
you cannot do shoes
with a red Nike sign. I mean, they're out there wearing yellow, orange, and pink fluorescent shoes.
You can't do black and white. You cannot do. My son will not even look at black and white shoes unless I'm wearing it. He'd be like, "Oh, Daddy, that's fly." I say, "Yeah, you can be fresh too. You think everything got to look like rainbow bright?" Like, right. No, they love bright colors now.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
All right, let me ask y'all this, because I did make clear what my purpose is, and I don't have any motivation or reason to have like a, hey, I'm the victim of racism too. But I do want to ask for you guys to articulate with how I've kind of mapped this out, and the fact that I'm going to tell some stories of how I was treated by specifically black people that were racist. What do y'all think is the value of us talking about this outside of it just being interesting and team humanity? We love humanity and we care about humans think and all of that sort of thing. But put some more words to why this is important.
I think it's important to expand our perspective of just not only humanity, but the more we lean into these conversations of how people have experienced it in their own way, the more we can unify, you know.
Yeah.
I tell you, I talk with my wife all the time, She's biracial, Caucasian American and Filipina. And so, you know, her experience was unique and interesting on her own, you know, but in many cases she feels like she couldn't even talk about it because it was overshadowed by other things, you know? So I think everybody's story is significant and important. What your experience is, other people will see themselves through those lenses as well.
Well, I think I agree with Robbie. I also like to add that for me, I think the importance of hearing the other side, it always has to be, I think it can't carry the same weight as what's on our side. Because of the amount of discrepancy that's between the two things happening. So even racism towards you, if you put me and you in the same space and somebody is racist towards me, the effect of it is it's got a longer lasting effect on me than it would on you, because it doesn't go past that point probably for you. Like, you can have a conversation with one other person that wouldn't know anything about what you're talking about. They'd be like, oh, I've never experienced that. But if I share my experience to somebody in my culture, in my environment, they're going to know exactly. And then they can share that with somebody that's going to know exactly what I'm talking about. Like, it just has a bigger, wider effect if it happens to you as opposed to happening to me. So I feel like the importance of it is, yes, to get the insight on what's going on the other side, but also don't lose sight. Long as the priority is, hey, this is what we should be focusing on now. If we want to,
right.
After that, like, just making sure the order of march is addressed the proper way for me, instead of that carrying just as much weight. I don't want to ever lose sight of, no, we got there's bigger fish to fry right now. And not minimizing you at all, Joey, or your feelings. But understanding, like, you would have to come into it understanding, I know what I experience is nowhere near what y'all experience.
Yeah, I even wrote down in my notes, I mean, I'm comfortable with just saying it like this. This conversation's not as important as prior conversations we've had on here about, you know, Black people specifically and the issues that you guys are dealing with every day. What we're talking about right now seems to fall into the same territory as the whole all lives matter, which is just,
it drives me
crazy. But, you know, it's like you a firefighter darts into a neighborhood and, you know, speeding through to ride up on a house that's burning, is burning up. And literally someone says, yeah, but all these houses matter. You know, like, that's the dumbest. Right. Oh, right. I hate it. I hate when people say all lives matter. Yeah, of course, we all know that, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a specific problem with a specific demographic of people.
That's the only thing that, because I'm all for equality and things like that. But in order for us to even start talking about being equal, we have to address where it's unequal, where it's uneven at first. Like, that's got to be the priority. We can't blend it in with, because then it diminishes what can be done with focusing on what the problem is, if that makes sense. And I think what you're saying is also important. I want to share this, and then I'll let y'all talk, because I feel like I'm doing a lot of talking, because I was really waiting on this. Because so many things have happened. I've been waiting on this conversation. I've actually felt something from the other side, listening to somebody's experience when they were saying it makes them uncomfortable to express what they have, like, it makes them not want to celebrate what their family did or the things that they've come through and conquered, and where, and that gave me a brand new perspective in that sense. And I was like, wow, I never even thought about that like that. I've always said I want to hear the other side, but not understanding that they're uncomfortable, their discomfort in celebrating their family is a big deal as well, because it right. makes, if you say, I'm proud of my family for what we came through, and but it may not be as bad as y'all, but we conquered some obstacles too. So it's like, how can I be proud of what we went through when you're telling me that my ancestors cheated, like basically cheated the game so we can have what we have? And so I think the focus have to always remain, this is where the wrong is at. Mm-hmm. And understanding that, it'll kind of make it easier for you and I to have a conversation, people of different walks of life to have conversations where there is no type of racism or negative thoughts about what the other person has experienced.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing that occurred to me too, as we're talking about this, there is a deeper level of comfort, and I can speak for myself, but I bet you guys would agree that having gone what we all went through, and I'll put the link in the show notes for any new listeners, but we talked about a situation in which I hurt Stoy, who's on this episode right now, who I hurt him, by sending a link to a video that was offensive to him, because it was racially offensive. And it was something that we actually had to work through. It was a group text, so all the co-hosts had to go through that for sure. I feel like, what a beautiful example. Tough conversations are hard. People are going to make mistakes and hurt one another, but I feel way more comfortable and at peace, Stoy, you and I having already gone through that. And I say you specifically because you and I are newer friends as far as rekindling our friendship from childhood. Robbie and I have a much more recent history, but would you agree with that?
Yeah, I totally. I would agree with that. And that is a great example of actually breaching the conversation with a healthy mindset. You know what I'm saying? I feel like the reason our country is still, well, the world is still stuck is because everybody's approach is not healthy when trying to breach that conversation or talk about it. They're not in a healthy mindset. So I'm interested to hear how your encounter went when you say you dealt with somebody being racist towards you, because there's so many things I feel like me or Robbie can shine a light on what could be going on that side, you know?
Yep.
But yeah, I do agree that us actually going through that, and it makes it, because of how we handled it, I feel like everything was handled properly. And that's why we've grown, and now we can talk about these things with ease.
For sure. All right. Well, I'll start with a story. And I was, so a few of the stories come from this season of life. So I'll give a quick snapshot. My last 2 years of teaching was at a school called Jane Edwards. It's on Edisto Island. It was about a 45-minute drive from Charleston to teach every single day. And the middle school consisted of about 70 kids, and we're talking probably 95% African American. And so I had, it was like right at the beginning of the year, and these kids are just getting to know me. And, you know, I'll admit one area I was really gifted in was learning the tension of laying down the law and showing who's in charge. But then simultaneously showing genuine care, concern, love, and the kids pick up on it right away. They can tell when you genuinely care. So we had already started forming somewhat of a relationship, me and these kids. And so they were excited about this new male teacher. I mean, sometimes in situations, you know, these kids are in middle school, they may have never had one before. So I went to a Baptist Hill football game because that is where kids at Jane Edwards end up unless they transfer and go to a different part of the county. And there was a kid and he was like, Mr. S, Mr. S, Mr. S. And he comes up and I'm like, hey, what's up? And he's just like, man, thank you so much for coming. I know you said you're coming. We didn't know if we'd see you. Just super excited to see his teacher. Next thing I know, dad. So his dad comes, walks over. Son is just elated. His teacher that he really likes a lot is getting to meet his dad. He's like, dad, this is the teacher that I told you about. His dad turns around and walks away. And I hurt for the kid more than anything. Like, that didn't really hurt my feelings, but the kid was leveled. Like, he went from complete elation, my dad gets to meet my teacher, to completely just defeated, crumbled emotionally. And I'm just curious, and this occurred to me for the first time, was he expecting a black male? Do you think that is what could have caused the immediate response of, I ain't talking to you? So this, listeners, is when we get into the speculation. There's no way we can know this guy's story, what was going on in his head. But what I want Stoy and Robbie to do to help us is give us some, here's what could have been going on. Here's what he could have gone through. Here's what his dad and mom could have taught him.
Honestly, it's kind of tough in the situation because I still feel like there's so much information that's lacking. I almost would wonder, like, this was the first time that you're meeting him.
Assuming, first time I met him. It's brand new to the school.
Brand new to the school. Like, the son was excited. So I almost wonder, like, what kind of things was he sharing with his dad? You know, that kind of thing. Because, yeah, like, it is speculation. It doesn't necessarily have to be racial. I mean, it could be, but, you know.
Look out. See?
Yeah, that wouldn't have necessarily been my go-to, necessarily. But, I mean, it could be. What year was this, by the way?
It would have been 2002.
2002, yeah. I don't exactly know what that motivation would be. I mean, there's so many possibilities of they could have issues at home, or maybe they're just not really trusting of authority figures. Maybe they just needed to have a place to send their kids, you know, and you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's a tough one for me.
But my thing is what gave you the impression that was racist? Like, what made you feel like it was racist towards you?
Because so he has zero knowledge of me as a person outside the little bit that his son has picked up and passed on to him. And so to me, it seems like it had to be something external that he observed. And I couldn't think of anything. I mean, does he can't stand bald guys? You know what I'm saying? So, but I love the fact that y'all's mind didn't even necessarily go there. But would you guys admit that that's likely to do with it? Or y'all thinking, man, you're really jumping the gun here?
I can speak for me. Like, I feel like if we feel something in that neighborhood or that area, we don't walk away from it. Like, we will say something, or you're going to know it, where we're coming from, some kind of way. Like, we're not just going to turn our back and walk off. You know what I'm saying? If he would have said something like, I ain't talking to that white dude, or I'm not talking, like, he's going to get something out if the disgust is that high. You know what I'm saying? So that's why I was waiting to hear something. And to hear that he just turned around and walked away, it's like, I don't know what that could be. Like, I don't know what it would be, because we would voice something.
That's why I was wondering if it was the first time that you encountered him, because the reaction almost seemed like y'all had encounters before, or there was like, you know, like say there was like email correspondence or something, and there was disgruntled emotions because of that. I didn't necessarily go immediately to the racial part of it, but you know, as a teacher, like there's so many reasons why parents don't get along with teachers, you know. Mm-hmm. But I feel like you were probably an easygoing teacher. Like that's just what I imagine. I don't know. Yeah. Young Joey.
After but, I whipped all their asses in
oh
gear,
my gosh.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm like
No, I mean it. I took the approach of being very hardcore right at the beginning to make sure they knew, and this is all my years of teaching, but they need to know who's boss, and then I can level those kids, man. That's the best part of teaching.
Well, that might have been it right there. That might have been the reason. He probably went home and was like, yo, this white dude said this on first day of school. And he was like, what?
Oh, you're being serious. Like he came home and he told us that if we get three warnings, it's a detention, right. No discussions asked. I ain't playing with y'all.
Maybe. Like
he
could, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah. Who does this guy think he is? And we didn't know this at the time when we were 25, but now the three of us know 25, you're daggum young, man.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and especially to a grown man, you look almost like a kid at 25.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's another thing. He could have been like, what the hell's wrong with Charleston County putting these young guys in here teaching my kids?
Right. mean,
that's y'all. That's do y'all is, I know y'all love me as a friend. And I know y'all respect me, but do y'all think that's kind of a my bad on my part to go racist? Is that a little overly sensitive, a little touchy? Like, why do you have to go racist right away? Like, what's y'all? You're not going to hurt my feelings. Like, is this the result of some sort of shortcoming on my part or jumping the gun? Or
I think it was probably the emotions that you were going into in that position, because you said it was like 95% black, right? Mm-hmm. So I feel like that's the mentality it feels like when you are the minority in the situation. I think it's going to be really a lot easier for you to go to that, honestly, to think that your whiteness is going to be an issue.
Were you able to just move on from there, or did you carry some kind of feelings? Did it linger after the fact and you were like, that was racist? Like, I want to know, when did you come up with that scenario? And when did you feel like he was being racist towards you?
I mean, that's what's so crazy about this conversation is I feel you guys are making a very simple, insightful observation that just wasn't even on my radar. I mean, it's very interesting that I went racist right away.
I had a situation,
and I don't know it, and it wasn't even like, I can't, it wasn't even anger or any, it was just like, oh wow, dang. Okay. You're going to be that open about your racism, and it very well may not have had anything to do with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had a situation whenever I was auditioning for the art school. So I was fifth grade, you know, auditioning, and, I walked in and I remember it was like me, my mom, and my stepdad. I was auditioning for trumpet, but because I couldn't play an instrument, they had me like sing, test out a bunch of mouthpieces. And I just remember like my 11-year-old self, like watching their faces, and they were just like, watch this. And they started asking me to like spell words. And I was like, what does this have to do with music? You know? And I remember like, they were like, spell gnat, like the bug. It was like, G-N-A-T. Mm-hmm. And they looked at each other. They were like, and I was like, what was that? You know, it was like the weirdest feeling as an 11-year-old. Like, why are they asking me to spell this easy 4-letter word? And I remember going out and my mom and stepdad, who were both musicians, like they were asking me like, what'd they ask you to do? And they, you know, I said, I did this. And I was like, and then they asked me to spell that. And then my parents like looked at each other like, why would they, you know, like it was like they didn't expect me to be able to get it. You know, and so to me, I'm like, I could be reaching, you know, and that could not be racial, but it definitely felt very racial to me, even in retrospect. And then also, you know, like my parents definitely took it as that as well. You know, like it was like just kind of this weird dynamic. Why would you make that assumption? Yeah. And what does that have to do with music?
Well, I didn't learn how to spell gnat till I was about 17. So, yeah. They could have been looking at you and be like, I bet you he know how to spell gnat. You know, like he up here playing a trumpet and
right. Like,
let me show you he's different. He's
exactly.
He's not one of them.
He looked like he could spell. This one looked like he could spell.
Spell that. Spell knife.
Take away all his books.
So,
oh man, hey, this will give you guys a good laugh. So the same school, and we are outside. Buses are, you know, ready to load up the kids. Everybody's still waiting. Well, what I observed in this situation was middle school kids being middle school kids. I didn't see any race involved. I saw three kids messing with another kid. Didn't even seem malicious or bullying. It just seems like kids being kids. So basically, there were three black students who had taken the only white boy's book bag in the class. I think he may have been the only one in the middle school, honestly, and basically playing keep away with his book bag. And he was intent on getting his book bag up back. And he wasn't taken too kindly to this. But again, I don't think they were being mean. Now, if he said, give me my book bag back, sure, they should have given him his book bag back. But still, it just didn't seem like any kind of bullying. And they were throwing it back and forth. Well, his mom, who is notorious for being a racist, which is crazy because if you grow up on Edisto Island, I mean, you are a minority if you're white. And if you're outwardly racist, that's kind of mind-blowing to me. But anyway, she, in a very, like, it was almost like a production she wanted everybody to hear. She said, it is about time for you to start sticking up for your own kind. Y'all, I'm a school teacher. I'm surrounded. There's kids all over the place, and a white parent wow. says this to me in front of all the kids. And right. So, y'all, I responded to her and I said, "Ma'am, it's like these the white kids and the black kids are all my kind." And I didn't. I just thought that would be a way of, you know, kind of putting some water on the fire a little bit. Y'all, the kids exploded into cheers. Oh, Mr. S. Like they saw it as me just kind of annihilating her. And I was like, no, don't, y'all don't do that. Cause that made me uncomfortable when they started to celebrate that. But all right. So this one's bad, man. This one's really bad. So I'm even younger, 22 years old, go on a spend the night trip with the kids, you know, some barrier island trip or something like that. Again, 22 years old, man. I mean, just golly, graduated just from high school 4 years earlier, and very, very outgoing, friendly person. So I'm about 10 years older than these kids. You know, I'm 22. They're about 12. So you could kind of make some guesswork on how old these kids' parents are. Well, nothing against this lady, but I'll just say I did not find her attractive in any way. I didn't see her as a peer. I saw her as someone that was to be respected at a higher level as far as just you're older than me. No romantic feelings, no attraction, nothing like that. But we were chaperones together. And so, God forbid, we got to know each other. You know, I got to know a little bit more of her, you know, family story. And, you know, while the kids are eating lunch, we may sit across from each other, you know, get to know each other a little bit. So I did what I've, you know, just it's just very natural. I just gave a little half hug. So we get to the school to drop off all the kids. Parents are there. So y'all know it's kind of chaotic. Parents all over the place, students all over the place. I give her a little half hug and say, it was good meeting you. I'm sure I'll see you again. Start walking away. I hear someone basically yelling from behind and said, "Excuse me, sir." I turn around and it was very intimidating because this was a very large, angry man. And we're talking almost shaking with anger. And I don't know his exact words, but he basically told me straight up. I do remember this line. It had something to do with, You white people have taken so much from my people, and now you're trying to take my wife. And y'all, these are legit emotions. This isn't someone trying to make a scene. This isn't someone trying to, you know, get attention or make some crazy point. He was emotionally wrapped up in this and legit angry and saw me as making a move on his wife. When I got back to my apartment, I just started talking about it and I broke down. Like, I was sobbing because, again, 22 years old, but for me, it was shock. Like, I was in complete shock. And so I think just talking it out, it just all came out. But let's do some talking about this guy.
Man, I'm still processing that. That's a, I don't know, man. I think in that particular situation, obviously there's the relational issues there, like feeling threatened with that within their own relationship. But as far as like the perspective of this like good looking white teacher.
Oh, thanks, dude.
You know, you know, that's like spending time with his wife, you know, like, and then he walks up and there he's hugging, or his wife is being hugged by this person that he's perceiving as attractive. Like, it was, it seemed like a threatening situation, but the fact that you're white obviously was another level on top of that. And I think, you know, that is like, that can be a trigger. And just being honest, like, not necessarily white American, but like European white culture does tend to have that whole, like, go and conquer, take whatever you want, kind of, you know, that vibe. Like,
that's what America is advertised as. That's what we say. Yeah.
And history in general too. Yeah. And it's like anything in the eyes of privilege, it's like anything that you want is afforded to you. You can get whatever you want. And then, you know, for us, like, we have to fight for it. We have mm-hmm. to go through so many hoops and whatnot to fight for it. And so, like, you know, I don't know that person's relationship situation, but obviously, like, that was a threat in the situation. It's like, man, I got this successful guy that's with my wife right now. And obviously, you know, this is a threat to our relationship. So I could definitely see that situation. I know that it's happened pretty often. Even it made me think of the movie Save the Last Dance. I don't know if y'all remember that movie. Mm-hmm. It was one of my favorite movies back in the 90s. But she was like, y'all white girls up here always trying to take our man. You took all our things and now you're trying to take our man. Yeah. You're taking the one good man that's in here, you know. And it's the same, you know, it's that same kind of struggle there, too, that they're depicting in the situation, too. So, yeah, I don't know. Also, my mind goes to, like, there's mentalities of schools of thought within the Black community of, like, some people are just tired of culturally sharing things, sharing successes with other races. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, in some cases, like, they just want to stick to ourselves and say, like, look, leave us alone. Give us our space, give us our things, give us our success, and we're going to take care of ourselves. Just don't interrupt that, you know, don't interrupt this space, which historically it always does get interrupted. You know, like, there's histories of like Black thriving communities that are now underwater. I don't know if you know about that, you know, things like that there are massacres and things like that. Societies that were doing completely fine, that were all Black, and then other people came in and either destroyed it, or, you know, there's just tons of trauma and violence that's surrounded about it. So within the Black community, it is a big mentality sometimes to be protective of our people, our culture, our things, and just say, look, just leave it alone. Don't, you know.
And you have helped me, Robbie. Like, this is my go-to now, is this guy could have witnessed his dad getting killed by white racist assholes. Like, we're, you know, we're talking, you know, this was already 22 years ago and he's a good bit older than me. I mean, he could have seen something with his own eyes. And I've talked to, you know, people in the gay community, for instance, and they've just gotten to I can't take it anymore level, to where they have no patience with anything.
Yeah.
And, you know, he could have been at that point where he's just like, I just can't take this. You know, I mean, maybe he was the victim of racism the past two or three days, and he's just like, and now this white guy's hugging my wife. Like, what the hell?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I something Robbie said earlier is kind of stuck with me. So my vibe was, what I received from the story was more going on the guy's end, as far as what his relationship, especially if you weren't attracted to her, there you couldn't have expressed anything that was threatening other than some residue from somewhere else with him. Right. You know what I'm saying? So that sounds more like a projecting more of what was going on in their relationship or his experiences. You can say, you can tie in he experienced things to be at the place that he was at. But I felt more like, okay, this is not a threatening thing to my family, but this is a threatening thing to my relationship. This is not a threatening thing to my heritage or personalized threat or shot at me. This is at my relationship. So, and another feeling that I got, it was small, but I still got it, that if you, I don't know how much you knew this person or how many interactions you had with the female, but she could have been the one that expressed discomfort to him as well. Mm-hmm. And it could, it, he had to stand up and protect her. So I know she was a chaperone, but I don't know how many interactions you had with her and to give her a hug. And she'd be like, you know, and then her husband see this and she look at him. All she got to do is give him a look. And we already know, okay, something ain't right. She uncomfortable. Mm. I'm about to mess you up. At you. So I felt that a little bit, but I more felt like, okay, maybe something was going on in their relationship prior to that. But when he expressed, you white people always trying to, that's stuff that's sunk in, but it was also to like help him get over the hump to express himself. You know what I'm saying?
And I forgot. Is it a game changer that I kissed her neck? I forgot.
No, that don't even play. That's not important at all.
That's just a needless detail.
You just gave her a hickey. Oh, yeah. Right, that's all.
All you did was what's give her so a hickey. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, what's she so pissed about? is it safe to assume that he was taught racism in any way by his parents, or that's even a little too speculative?
No, that you can, it's safe to assume that because that's taught in our, like, it not taught racism, taught about what racism is, like, not to be racist toward him. So when somebody is being attacked, there's no telling how their response is. You know what I'm saying? So we still got to keep in mind he's from the attacked side. He's not the aggressor here. He's from the side that has been attacked repeatedly and been oppressed and pushed down. So all responses are going to come from that place. You have to keep that at in the front of your mind, like, okay, I, like, you got me and Robbie here. When you sent that commercial thing that offended me, and Robbie took a more subtle approach. But he would say, hey, I don't know if you should, you know, share that with the group or something like that. And I'm gonna say, why the fuck did you do that? You know, like, our approach to it is completely different because of our experiences. So, and our level of maturity. Like I told you, I came into racism late in the game. You know what I mean? Like I was oblivious to this going through my childhood and all of that. I experienced somebody calling me a nigger. You know what I'm saying? But I thought it was funny. You know, I just wanted to get away with my life. I'm sliding down the side of this man's house. he thinking I done did all kind of stuff to his daughter. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I'm sliding and just trying to run, trying to get home. I was scared like that. And then he, you f***ing nigger, da, da, da. Like, what else could he do? What else could he do or say when I already got away? You know what I mean? But just saying, I'm on that guy was on the, he's always going to be on the side of being oppressed. What is important is knowing his level of maturity when he's expressing or that is coming out of him. So, yes, I think to go back to your question, yes, I'm sure, 100% sure that his family is, has taught him, hey, these people have done this to our people.
Yeah.
But how he chooses to handle that, it can be a wide range of responses. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. When somebody is offended and oppressed, you know, exactly like what you said, like some people respond with aggression. Some people respond with, you know, running away, you know, or whatever, or, you know, there's different ways that people respond to that. And so it's almost like you have to get past so many of those levels before you can even have an honest conversation, you know, like these interactions that we're talking about. It's like, there's so much missing information. There's so much missing context to even know if something even is racist, honestly, you know, cause there might be something, you know, they might've gone through something at the house before you hugged her, you know, or maybe she had a look, maybe she was looking at you and she was like kind of interested. You just didn't see that. I mean, that could have been the thing too. Like,
I'm saying. So many layers.
Yeah, there's so many. You know,
there's so many layers.
Mm-hmm.
Where that could. So I'm glad you're saying we speculate. I'm sorry for cutting you off, Robbie.
No. I mean, there's just. I think all these situations are. It's so important to think about like all the possibilities, especially, and to kind of train your mind to do that too, because I feel like when we do that, we're not so easy to just react out of the first thing that pops in our head to and realize like, okay, because I feel like I do that all the time with family and friends. It's like, all right, they're blowing up on me right now. Like, what's going on? Like, are they really blowing up on me, or is there something else deeper that's actually going on? And sometimes you get to that quickly, and sometimes you don't. And so you have to realize in that moment, all right, I can either match that energy and blow up and we're not going to go nowhere, you know, or we can sit on this and we can figure out like what's really behind all this, what's really, you know, happening, and like get to either a solution. But in your case, if you're working with parents, I feel like that's so important to build a relationship with the parents of the students. That's what I learned as an educator. That's what I learned as a youth pastor, is like build a relationship with the parents of the people that you're either educating or ministering to, because that, and then also see them as a team, as a part of your education team or whatever you're doing. When you're working with kids, like you got to include them in the plan as much as they'll allow it. You know, some parents want to be standoffish, but I think it's so important to try to include them as much as possible, and you won't have as many conflicts. Number two, like the more parents you have relationships with, the more credibility that you have. You're not just this random dude that, you know, students are talking about when they get home that they've never heard of, you know, and you have more buy-in. So it's more success for the student as well. It's just all around a better situation, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think important part of everything we're saying is just being more mature in how you respond to whatever is coming from somebody else. Because the more you open up and listen and receive and then say, okay, how much of this have to do with what I brought to the situation? How much of this have to do with what I did, something I said?
Yeah.
And once the closer you have a relationship with God, I think that answer comes to you quicker. The more mature you get as a person, I think that answer comes to you quicker. The just growing and understanding that when you're dealing with this doesn't have to only apply to Black people, but since we're talking about that, when you're dealing with anybody that's been oppressed in any kind of way, just knowing that that response can be all over the place. And once you dial it in and be like, okay, I got an aggressor here. Okay, I got a philosophical person here. Okay, I got a runner.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't want anything to do with me. Like, he don't want to speak to me. He don't want to say anything to me. This is the type of person I got, I'm dealing with. Then if that's the reason why they responded to you like that, then you have a clear path of understanding of how to deal with it. So if I know if I'm dealing with a runner, but I didn't do anything for him to run, then I will keep my distance. I'll fade back or not be so aggressive in my approach, or send an email, a letter, and say, hey, I've noticed you, da-da-da. Something that would breach the situation, but also respecting what it could be. Not exactly what it is, what it could be, and understanding that, okay, next time this encounter happens, that parent may be aggressive, and that parent may say something to me that I got offended by, and then I respond instead of thinking, taking a few minutes to say, okay, this is somebody that's been oppressed, and they felt some kind of reason to defend, stand up, be strong, or like it. If you can do that, it'll make your response much more reserved, as far as much more educated. That's what I would say. Your response would be more educated and not go to the offense, like where you take an offense to it. That's what I think.
Yeah. This is one more story, and then I've got a few questions. I'm going to challenge you guys to explain as little as possible because we're running out of time. But with this one, so first and foremost, both of us, very, very, very young. I'm probably 25. She's probably 23. Same school that we've been talking about. I'm up for Teacher of the Year. So is she in the school. So the school did it kind of weird. Once teachers are nominated, then they write a little write-up about themselves, which I thought was really weird and uncomfortable for me, honestly, because it seems like you're bragging on yourself as to why you deserve Teacher of the Year. And the faculty votes, and you know, it all gets passed around. The teachers read what the nominated teachers wrote and vote. Well, I got to read the letters of other teachers who were, for lack of better words, competing with me for Teacher of the Year. And one of the letters was a younger Black woman who, I mean, she was my friend. And so this is why it was kind of weird. It's kind of weird reading when we're friends and we haven't even talked about something like this, but I was really surprised, and I saw this very black and white back in the day. Not as she's a very bad person, but that's just uncalled for. I see it very differently now. In her write-up about herself, she actually, I mean, her main point was, what message are we sending to these kids when there are quality teachers? One of them happens to be a black woman. Another one is a white male. And the white male wins. Like, what kind of message are we sending? There's also educated black people. All of these kids are black. Why would we have a white Teacher of the Year? At the time, wasn't angry about it, wasn't offended, but I did think, that's ridiculous. This has nothing to do with race. And she did herself in, unfortunately, because most of the faculty's white, and we're in the South, so they're probably just like, you know, that's uncalled for. I see where she's coming from now. Now, I don't think that's a wise or necessarily the best way to vote, by saying, yeah, you know, we might as well just vote for, you know, they're both pretty good teachers. We'll vote for her though, because she's black and female. I get the lamenting, though, as far as the message we're sending the kids.
If you look at it from the perspective of how many advantages have been given to just because you're white, that aspect is it's sort of like she was leaning on, hey, our audience is black. So it sounds like it was coming from that kind of energy where she's saying our audience is Black, and it's still unfair, you know, like it's mm-hmm. coming, but she's coming from a, like how you said that lady asked you, when are you going to stand up for your people? Like, when are right. you, it's coming from that place. So you have that same energy in a white woman saying it to you, coming from a Black person that has already dealt with that same thing more. You get what I'm saying? So it's like, so you could put those two people in the same room and they would probably have identical responses to situations when it applied to their people, because you're yeah. dealing with that kind of maturity, that level of person.
Nah, that's good.
Yeah. And I think that, like, as a leader in administration, you know, cause obviously I think this was like a student students voted for this. Right. And so that was probably out of people's control, but I feel like as the administration, it could be another solution to honor her in a different way, instead of like a superlative voting kind of thing, but like still honor her, because I do think that it's important to shine light on people of color who are in leadership positions. I feel like it's important to be able to identify that you as a student can see yourself in a leadership position. You could see yourself as a teacher. You could see, you know, I think that those things are important. I don't think I thought about it as much when I was a kid, but now as an adult, and I see that, you know, when I'm in grad school and I'm like the only Black conductor in the program, you know, or I'm the only whatever, like, and I'm looking around like, why aren't there more people, you know, here like this? And so that's when it starts to dawn on me. I'm like, yeah, like we do need more representation in that. And just to like, you know, how many white people got positions, got chosen over me, you know, throughout my life? A lot,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so I think, yeah, I think just honor, give people honor where it's due, like, you know, in other situations. It doesn't have to be in a superlative or like a vote, you know, popular.
Yeah, but it's so difficult in these type of questions and answers that we find ourselves trying to reason to make it make sense and all of that's directly attributed to what we have been through. So that's why we make it a priority to face this thing for what it is, because it's long as it lingers in the background, or we throw All Lives Matter in the middle, or what about like conversations like this, even when we throw stuff like this, it takes the kick off of, no, let's focus on what the problem is right here and go at it directly. So these types of conversation, they bring in so much banter and different ways to handle it. It leaves us still in the dark and still in the same place, not focusing on let's do this. I'm all for celebrating accomplishments of Black people and things like that. I feel accomplished as a Black person, but I don't want you to give me nothing I didn't deserve. But right. I also want you to acknowledge the fact that I had to go through 10 more things than you did to get to where I'm at. Like, so it's so difficult, man, to fathom the right way, to come up with the right way to handle these things, because there's so many layers of stuff you got to go through to even say, okay, now we on a level playing field. We got right. so much dirt to right. lay down and ground to lay down to make it level that yeah. we're still digging. We're still digging stuff up and discovering new things that happen. Like with me, I told you, I'm new to it. I feel new to it, and I'm responding with vigor. You know what I mean? And somebody else who've already yeah. dealt with it, like my mama that done dealt with it for 30 plus years or more than me, then it's like they're tired, you know? And then you got the young demographic that's getting right into it. They're coming at it with a different kind of energy. And yeah. so it's sparking up new things to all people. And so it's so much going on. It leaves us in the same place. If we don't all focus on this is where the problem is, right here. And I think it's so much corruption. It's okay for us to, they make it okay for us to stay in the same place, because long as we're debating about it, the shit won't ever change.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Man, this met expectations of what I thought could come out of this conversation. All right, so this is where I challenge you guys to keep it as brief as possible. Y'all will probably chuckle at some of these, but I would say these are questions that I am, just like everything else, they're very specific things. I'm very curious. Some of it is, hey, please educate me. Some of it may sound offensive. Let me get started. First question, is there a real deal prejudice amongst Black people when it comes to shade of skin? How significant is it, and has it gotten better? I have definitely heard Black people joke around about someone being so Black, and it was kind of like in a laughy way. Well, it's about as Black as you can get, blah, blah, blah. Is there a prejudice problem amongst Black people when it comes to shade of skin, or no?
No, I think it's residue from being mocked when you see something, or the way that the society that we grew up in. I think if you see something and you kind of look at it and then adopt it for a little while, not to say it doesn't have an effect on our community, but we don't really discriminate against each other as far as skin tone. We do have a sort of a, I would say, confused hate towards each other. And I don't think it just reside in the skin tone. I think it resides in our confusion about what's been done to us and our intensity towards each other when we have differences is higher than it is when it's going towards any other demographic. And it's almost like we understand that person that I'm having a problem with, they're going to come at me just as hard as I'm going to go at them. So it kind of makes that hatred toward each other high, very high. And it's because of what we went through. If me and you have a problem, Joey, I may talk to you and be like, you know what? I'll fuck you up. You know what I'm saying? Da, 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 da. And how you respond to that going to be completely different if I say that to somebody like me. Because if I say that to them, their next thing going to be, I'll fuck you up. And it's coming at such a high level. It's because we know what the other person has been through, what they're feeling. So I know that had to trigger you a certain kind of way. So you better get me before I get you. There's no play in it. There's no play in there. So that intensity towards each other, I think it goes deeper than whatever skin tone you are. It's just being oppressed so long, you know that other person is hurting just as much as you.
Man, it's a complicated one. I know you're trying to wrap up time, but when it comes to skin tone, skin shade, I think the same thing. I think there's different perspectives. I used to work for my jazz mentor who had a lighter complexion. He's a Black man with a lighter complexion, and he saw it as a huge positive thing. He saw it as more like beautiful diversity. The fact that, you know, Black people, we come in lighter shades and darker shades and all over, you know, like our hair is different, our eyes are different. And, you know, I think diversity within the Black race is a huge theme, you know, like we're a creative culture. So I think, and his side of it, you know, like that's a perspective that I've seen a lot. That's actually a perspective that I tend to adopt as well. But I also think that there's other dynamics too that make it really complicated too, because of this, because of different reasons. Number one, tracing our heritage back to what country are we from? Like,
Like, there's so much mystery, there's so much confusion with that. And then also the whole idea of slaves and plantation owners and how they would have relationships with their slaves, you know? And so obviously that would produce a lighter skin complexion there too. So like it gets complicated because, you know, is there shame to that? Is there pride to that? Like, how does that make you feel about a white slave owner, you know, that felt like he could either sleep with his slaves and not claim them as their wife or whatever that is. It's so layered. It's so complicated in that particular aspect of it. I just say, yeah, I don't know. And it's not like a simple conversation, but I personally, because I just love diversity and I love beauty, I think it's beautiful. Like I'm a lot darker than my dad. I'm the same complexion as my mom, you know, and my kids are a lot lighter than me, you know, like it's just,
and I'm a lot darker than everybody, but I want to say something about light skin was in style at one point.
It was.
So, yeah.
It was.
So it was. Now light skin ain't really that in style. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. All right. I'm going to say a few names. We'll go Martin Luther King, Frederick Douglass, Rosa Parks. The next two names, are we in the same vicinity of level of respect? And I really don't have any clue what y'all are going to say. Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson.
Well, any black person that has done anything for black people in doing it on a wide scale, I have respect for them. Like I say, you don't know what they have went through. And once again, everybody fights different. So I know if you're fighting the fight that I'm fighting, then you're not going to fight like me. You're not going to swing your right when I'm swinging my right. So if I go at them in any other way other than respect and knowing that, hey, I'm on the streets, you're in the backyard. I'm in the house, you're outside. I'm underground, you're on top of ground. Like, if I understand that you're fighting the same fight, I have respect for you. Now, when you blatantly come out there and say something like black people is this or black, like in attacking black people, now you're not fighting the same fight I'm fighting. You're fighting against me. And now I that's where I start to lose respect for you. But if you on the same team, I don't want you fighting like me, because you're going to be able to get in pockets I can't get into, because I don't see it like you do. So yeah. No lack of respect for those two names at all.
Yeah, same. I mean, same. I feel like the list is so extensive, you know, same thing. Like, everybody's gift and talent is so different. And I personally think that the work to racial reconciliation, unification, all that stuff, it really does take you considering your own circles of influence, you considering how you're uniquely gifted, you're uniquely made, and then making the decision to say, yeah, I do want to have a part in this. I do want to influence this and not just be a passive person walking through life, you know, because that's everybody's choice too, you know. But when you do, like for example, like at our old place of work, you know, we had lots of conversations that was, you know, our circle of influence, but it wasn't my friend's circle of influence, you know? So like having, certain conversations about like how different blind spots we might have as an organization, like that was something that was uniquely my opportunity. Mm-hmm. And whatever my experience was could aid to that. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. When we have talked about our childhood, I learned some things that were going on in your mind, just in general, and some specific things that I would have never known if we hadn't talked about it. And I'm going to share something, with you. Like, it was a thing for me as a white kid. And y'all follow me. Y'all's mind's going to be in the gutter here for a second. But like in PE locker room, my first exposure to you guys, like black peers of mine without your shirts on, I'm like, holy shit. Like, how are they all ripped? Like,
I knew you were going to say that.
And
And that's just, it's just the truth, the muscle tone. And yeah, and here's what I've always thought, and this may be a very offensive thought, is that because during slavery they would take the strongest male, strongest woman, and just try to make super strong because that was advantageous for them from a lucrative perspective? Did that have anything to do with it at all? Or that's just how you guys came, man, ripped, ready to kick ass in the NBA.
No, I mean, you think about how you go through life, and the more comfortable you get, if you're not a gym rat, then you're sitting on the couch with your remote control turning with something to drink on or something to eat, some good food, as opposed to trying to figure out a way to survive, trying to out there struggling, you're hustling, you're working, you're always on your feet. You don't have time to eat. You don't have time to sit around. So I think it's a testament of how the struggle and the hustle, I would say the hustle that we've gone through, and not only that, the lack of resources. So when I got to school, sometimes that's the only time I could eat, or the first time I would get something to eat. I'm not trying to talk bad about my mom at all, but we were on government assistance, and so certain things like that, I think that play a part in your body sculpture, mm-hmm. and how you come up. So you always had a meal. You always had, you didn't have to go outside and play. Like sometimes we got play for food. Like, mm-hmm. okay, I'm gonna go run around with my friends, and because I'm hungry as hell, but I'm gonna go run and play with my friends until dinner is cooked. So mm-hmm. I think resources and things like that, yeah, that all plays a part in the hustle and the, that Black people has been through all these years. It definitely the evolution of who appears in this generation, or the generation before that, or the generation before that, definitely that had to play a role in it. I'm outside working and you inside sitting down. Yeah. That plays a role.
Obviously, there's a lot of science behind like the anatomy of in different cultures and things like that. I feel like the American history is kind of younger, is, you know, it's pretty young. So I don't know. Some of that information might trace back. I know that Elizabeth has told me in the dental world, African Americans have thicker bone density. So that would be something to kind of like look into as far as like, you know, the anatomy, whatever, you know, whatever the environment was. But also, I was just going to say, like, growing up, I know we talk about how I don't really know that much about sports, but that's because, like, once I got to sixth grade, you know, my schools didn't have sports. But before then, like, we played football every single day.
Yeah.
We played baseball every single day. And it wasn't baseball. It was like, you got a stick and you got a ball and you were playing, you know, you were playing baseball. We played wall ball. We played basketball. Now, I was always terrible at basketball, but I was pretty good at all the other ones, you know. And yeah, so like by the time you get to middle school, like that is your recreation. You're playing that
all the time.
Yeah, so it's intense. So I think that also kind of keeps you in shape and more than we realize. You know? So,
yeah, and I think y'all played it for y'all. It was a recreation for Joey and them, like a leisure. It was a must.
Oh yeah,
you know what I mean? Like it was necessary because that was a avenue to be successful as well. That was an avenue to get out. That was a way to get your family out of the rut. So yeah, sports was absolutely mandatory.
Yeah. Last question. I know there's hundreds of living people from all walks of life, all races that you guys revere and think a lot of. Two low-hanging fruit living Black people that are either highly influential in your life right now, or you're just like super impressed with. And it could be, you know, a pop star, athlete, politician,
You know, that's a tough one because, I mean, I respect so many people right now. But you put that filter of, like, they got to be alive right now. So the first one I went to was Obama. Mm-hmm. I am a huge Barack Obama fan. I'm working my way through his very large book right now. Like, I'm listening to it on audiobook, but it's like 20 hours long. So I just, yeah, I love the journey that he had of academia. I believe that knowledge brings power. I believe that there's so much information that has been kept from us, and it's information that could make our lives better, you know? So like, I love that. And then, I'm just like the second one that just came to my head, which, you know, was Viola Davis. I don't know. I really love, I just read her book, the stuff that she came through, the future that she built for herself, her life as an artist. She talks about the racial struggle of it. And, you know, she talks about just so many things as an artist that it takes to be successful and still, you know, still struggle to be not only a black actor, but a black female actor, you know, and the problems that come along with that. So those would be kind of my first nice. Two that came to my head, but I know that the list is very long.
Yeah. Who are two that pop in your head, Stoy?
Immediately, I would say my sister, but I would then go further to say like my family, because of the things that we're doing right now to kind of solidify our future of the next generation of prelos that come behind us. So that to me is, it hits harder than me. I've been very proud of some of the black celebrities that are speaking up for other black celebrities or speaking up for their profession. And so, but the most impact for me is coming directly from my family, like my sister and my mama, especially who's experienced a lot more and still is, she's willing to change certain mindsets in order to change the trajectory of the next generation. So that to me it resonates much deeper because I understand exactly what they're going through or what they went through. So, mm-hmm. So that has more of an impact to me. And I would say, as far as a celebrity go, I can't even put my finger on her name, but she's like going at it with Oprah right now.
Taraji.
Yes. Mm. I just felt her in an interview where she was speaking to somebody and she just came from the deepest part of her soul when she responded, and it brought her to tears, and it yeah. brought me to tears. Like, I felt so deeply what she was saying and where it was coming from. That's the same kind of emotion that is invoked in me when I have meetings like this with my family yeah. and we're talking about generational wealth and changing the trajectory of our entire family. So that yeah. that's what I would, and I appreciate that question, Joey, and yeah. being able to express that right now.
For sure. I love it. And but now you put Robbie in a situation where he's just like, well, you pulled the family card. Of course, family. No. That I love and respect. Why you got to make me seem so shallow?
No.
I love my family.